This is KVNF's regional newscast for Tuesday, April 20th. I'm Gavin Dahl. Paonia Town trustees continue to grapple with a draft ordinance for cannabis retail and medical shops in town. At their regular meeting last week, the board cut the number of stores and licenses in half, the Delta County Independent reports. Until last Tuesday's meeting, the board had agreed on 6 locations and a total of 12 licenses. Now the town will allow just 3 physical locations with a total of 6 licenses, one of which must be medical. The ordinance will come before the board for possible adoption at the regular meeting Tuesday, April 27th at 6:30 p.m. The U.S. House yesterday passed the Safe Banking Act, which now goes to the Senate. The legislation, introduced every Congress since 2013 by Colorado Representative Ed Perlmutter, would allow credit unions and banks to work with cannabis companies. Because marijuana remains illegal at the federal level, Colorado's multi-billion dollar cannabis industry has operated primarily in cash. Governor Jared Polis drafted a letter to Congress signed by 20 governors saying, quote, "My fellow governors and I are urging Congress to make the common sense decision to allow state-licensed cannabis-related businesses to have normal bank accounts. For more than a decade, Colorado has been a model of the success of these businesses, and it's well past time that we allow them to join our banking system," end quote. The Denver Post reports robberies of dispensaries and grow-ops reached a 3-year peak in 2019. A group of locals have been holding peaceful street demonstrations in Paonia for a year since George Floyd died at the hands of police in Minneapolis. Kate Redmond spoke with them yesterday.
A small group of people meet weekly in Polis Park in Paonia for a silent vigil for social justice. Yesterday, the day of closing arguments in the Derek Chauvin murder trial in Minneapolis, I wanted to find out what inspired these women to take a knee in a public place in a small town. I interviewed Betsy, who requested that her last name not be used. Tell me why you're here.
I come every Monday at noon because I felt I needed to respond in some public, physical, routine way to the injustices I was hearing about. We actually began gathering over a year ago in response to the murder of George Floyd. A few of us just kind of realized that we needed to do something here in Paonia, and since then, 3 of us have found this comfort in each other, knowing that there's at least 3 of us who are very concerned about things like Black Lives Matter, about social justice issues. We've been meeting very safely with COVID regulations, but we still felt we needed to be together at least once a week.
The vigil is every Monday at noon for 9 minutes and 26 seconds. For KVNF, I'm Kate Redmond.
Farmers and ranchers in the Colorado River Basin are looking at what could be another dry summer. From KUNC, Luke Runyon looks at how they're preparing for water shortages.
Brandon Dalton manages irrigation at Hearts Basin Ranch near Cedar Edge in western Colorado. The ranch has been in extreme drought since last summer, with snowpack on the nearby mountains well below average. Dalton says tough decisions will need to be made.
Do we need to find properties and grass to lease? You know, is that a way to keep all of our animals if we figure we're going to be short? Do we need to buy in some hay? Do we need to sell some early?
75% of the upper Colorado River Basin is in extreme to exceptional drought, the worst since 2018. If conditions stay dry, Dalton says ranchers will be forced to either buy expensive feed or sell off their cattle herds. I'm Luke Runyon.
After issuing almost 400 executive orders related to the coronavirus, Governor Polis is starting to hand over some of his pandemic response powers to cities and counties. Capital Coverage reporter Scott Franz spoke with the governor about this new phase of the pandemic and his response to another crisis, last month's mass shooting in his hometown of Boulder.
We're entering a new phase of the pandemic where local governments are getting more control over what restrictions are in place. But you recently warned that the state is experiencing a fourth wave of cases. Do you think now is still the right time to switch to this local control system?
Well, the fourth wave is different than the other waves because what we're seeing is record low numbers of hospitalizations of people in their 60s and 70s and 80s that have the worst outcomes. But we're seeing hospitalizations go up for people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. And it's typically shorter stays and better outcomes. Still, even at that age, not everybody makes it, which is tragic. But it's just a very different situation than when we had the much higher mortality rates of people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. What's really important is that people get vaccinated. I mean, that will protect you. We're at close to 40% of adults that are vaccinated now. And especially for those who are vaccinated, they can have the confidence to go back out and relax a little. For those who haven't yet, you know, now, it, you know, the virus is still very prevalent. Wear a mask, avoid socializing with people outside of your home, and just get vaccinated.
You've predicted we'll have a relatively normal summer based on the vaccination rates. You know, has anything that's happened in the last few weeks with rising case numbers, with the pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, has anything changed your outlook yet for what our summer is going to look like?
Well, I'm still hopeful, and what everything we're hearing is that Johnson & Johnson pause will only be about a week. If it lingers, if that pause goes 3, 4, 5 weeks, it will delay the state by a week or two in getting through everybody. So as long as we get that back in the next week or so, and it's safe and effective, and it's one shot, it's preferred by a lot of people, as long as we get that back soon, I think it's just a hiccup in the road, and it doesn't delay our vaccinated by mid to late May. But if it lingers for a few weeks, it could push that back to early June.
Another question that comes to mind, you know, it's been a month now since the tragic shooting in Boulder. Do you think the state legislature here in Colorado needs to take any more action on gun policy this session beyond the two bills they've already sent you?
Of course, if there's any other bills that reach my desk, I'll take a look at them. I know there's certainly discussions about other things that can be done on mental health, on gun safety.
But do you personally have any thoughts on policies that might need to be done?
You can certainly learn from, you know, each incident. And part of the problem is you're always correcting for the last incident. And then the next one comes at you from a different corner. But in the case of the Pink Super shooting, it would have been a great example of how we could have used our red flag law, our extreme risk protection order law. But in many, and I think this is the case across the state, families who could use it don't know about it. How do we do outreach, multilingual, multicultural, to reach people who have a situation where they're a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, they're worried about them, they have a weapon, and how can they use that extreme risk protection order? When you look at how they've been used about 2 years since it's been the law, it's been used more by law enforcement. And when it had been designed, it had been thought it would be used more by families, particularly parents of, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. That's a lot of the age of onset of some of these psychological risk factors. And I think it needs to be better publicized to make sure that people know that that's available to them.
Thanks so much for your time, Governor. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
That was Scott Franz speaking with Governor Jared Polis. On Monday, the governor signed two gun-related bills that were being debated before the Boulder shooting. One deals with safe storage to help reduce suicides by young people and others. The other requires gun owners to report lost or stolen weapons. Failing to do so would result in a $25 fine on the first violation. Bill sponsors said it would help fight firearms trafficking and reduce gun violence. Republicans questioned how, once a missing weapon is already on the streets. That does it for Tuesday's KVNF Regional Newscast. Special thanks to Kate Redmond. I'm Gavin Dahl.